Welcome to another edition of Influence, the global podcast that shines a spotlight on the influencer marketing industry. My name is Gordon Glenister. Among my many roles, I'm the global head of influencer marketing at the Branded Content Marketing Association, which is a professional membership organization and representing the branded content and influencer marketing industry. But I'm also a keynote speaker, trainer, and consultant in the sector and published author on influencer marketing strategy, which now, by the way, is available on Amazon and other leading bookstores. In this podcast series, you're going to hear me interview all sorts of people from the world of influencer marketing. But before we start, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast series just to make sure that you don't miss a future episode. In today's edition, I'm talking about advertising disclosures from the FTC, better known as the Federal Trade Commission, and the impact on the influencer marketing industry. And with me to talk about this is Robert Freund, who's a lawyer and has specialised in the sector for some time now. Robert and I talk about the essential components of a typical influence agreement and the impacts of getting it wrong. So I started by asking him about who and what the FTC is.
The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, is the federal government level authority that's charged with, among other things, policing the marketplace for unfair or deceptive acts and practices. So a big part of that is what people commonly think of as false advertising. The states have their own state level authorities, attorneys general and so forth, that enforce similar state laws. But at the nationwide level, the FTC is the government agency in charge of this kind of thing. In terms of influencer marketing, where the FTC gets involved is their mission, or one of their missions, is to make sure that consumers understand when they're being advertised to. And so starting from more traditional media, moving into the blogger space initially, there were concerns about advertorial content, native advertising in the early stages of the internet, not being clear to people who are browsing blogs, whether it's true opinion or if there's some incentive behind it that would affect the weight or the credibility that a consumer would give to that endorsement. And so the attention to influencer marketing from a conceptual standpoint isn't really new. It's just, here's the evolution of how this issue is presented. And now the regulators are trying to sort of play catch up to the way that marketing has evolved. And so they're applying the same law, Section 5 of the FTC Act, but they have been evolving their approach to making sure that they are satisfying their mission of making sure consumers understand what's advertising and what isn't. And so when you see things like hashtag ad, that is pretty much a creation of the FTC. And that's one example of how they want people to understand when they're being advertised to. And it's more nuanced than that, but effectively, anytime there's a material connection between an advertiser and an endorser that is not obvious, that somebody wouldn't expect, and that would affect the weight or credibility that somebody gives to an endorsement, that connection needs to be disclosed. And so that's where hashtag ad and things like that come from. That's a big piece of what the FTC cares about in the influencer marketing context. A material connection doesn't have to just be payment to trigger that disclosure requirement. It can also be like free product. It can be discounts. It could be something like entry into a sweepstakes or other promotion. It could be VIP access. It could also be things like an employer-employee relationship or a family relationship. If your spouse has a muffin business or something, and on your Instagram, you're talking about how great it is, the FTC would tell you, people need to know that you don't just love the muffins. It happens to be your spouse's business, that sort of thing. So there's not really an exhaustive list of everything that could be a material connection. There's a lot of different types of relationships that could fit into that definition.
So I'm presumably, though, like in the UK, there's been lots of examples of where people just haven't disclosed this on their Instagram posts and almost getting away with it because there's been no sort of enforcement. Just wondering how the FTC treats this when in some instances there isn't enough enforcement. So others would say, well, if that influencer is not bothering to put hashtag ad, then I won't.
Right. It's a big problem that the FTC has recognized, that non-compliance is still so rampant. And there was a trend before COVID, at least, of more FTC attention to influencer marketing specifically. Starting around 2017, you started to see more enforcement actions popping up with respect to not making those disclosures. And then after the Firefest incidents, where the FTC sent, I think it was over 60 warning letters to individual influencers who had promoted that festival without making that disclosure we talked about. Following that, there were a handful of other enforcement actions, the largest of which occurred right before COVID really took hold of the world. Last March, there was a case that the FTC brought against a brand that was selling weight loss tea. The brand was called Teamy. And they had a large-scale influencer campaign with big celebrities like Cardi B and a handful of others. And what's interesting about that case in particular is many of those influencers did make a disclosure in their Instagram posts promoting Teamy. They had hashtag Teamy partner, which, you know, on its own is an acceptable way of making that disclosure. But the problem is, it's not enough to just have a disclosure. The FTC has requirements about the way that you make it. It has to be clear and conspicuous. And they break it down further into how you can be relatively sure you're meeting that standard. But part of it is the disclosure has to be in close proximity to the claim it's qualifying. In this instance, the hashtag Teamy partner was, you had to click on more on the caption to expand the text to be able to see it. And so the FTC's position with that is, somebody could be scrolling through their Instagram feed, not pause, and not understand and just miss the disclosure and therefore not understand that they're being advertised to. And that was part of the case against Teamy. And the result was Teamy ended up paying $15.2 million in connection with that enforcement action. So they were really getting as specific as where the disclosure was made and not just the complete absence of one, which was interesting. A few months prior to that case, the FTC had announced that they were going to be doing a comprehensive review of a document they published called the Endorsement Guides. The Endorsement Guides don't change the law. It just sort of gives guidelines, pretty comprehensive, detailed guidelines from the FTC about, here's what we think about various ways people are disclosing things online or not disclosing, with some hypothetical examples. And they had called for a review of that endorsement guide document. They wanted public input, and it was slated to come out sometime last year. But when COVID hit, the FTC's priorities changed a bit to things like price gouging and fake COVID cures and things like that. Understandably, a bit more consumer harm there. But leading up to that, you had the Teamy case, you had this vocal attention to influencer marketing specifically. And I think we'll see them pick that back up once it feels like we're turning the corner on the pandemic here. So I expect the attention will shift back to influencer marketing a bit more in the near future here.
Yeah, and one of the things that I know the ASA have been looking into is using artificial intelligence and using technology to scour over many feeds to assess which ones are using proper disclosures and which ones are not, and try and pick those up at random, because at the moment, of course, it only works when somebody has complained, isn't it, before they can act. So it's there'll be people that are continually doing this without reprehension. So I don't know what your thoughts are on technology helping educate a wider community.
It's hard for me to really wrap my mind around the technology that would effectively pick up where a disclosure needs to be, where it might not be. And I would bet that the savvier marketers out there would get up to speed on what that AI is looking for and come up with a creative way potentially to not get picked up in it if they're the type of business that would place, you know, conversions over compliance. A lot of this is just a lack of education. There's tons of influencers out there, I'm sure, who would be making these disclosures if they knew that it actually was required of them. But there are studies, I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but there are surveys done of influencers and marketers about basically asking them, has a brand you worked with even told you about FTC disclosure requirements? And a huge much larger than you would expect percentage are reported that they're not even aware of this. And so I think just education is a piece of it. But there are also brands and influencers out there that feel like, well, if I put hashtag ad or if I even make the disclosure in some other more organic way, it's still going to cut into my conversions. I'd rather make enough money on the front end to be able to afford an FTC penalty on the back end, that kind of thinking. If AI is able to at least police and generate letters to be sent in a more effective way, then that would at least solve the education piece, I think, or at least go a long way to helping out with it. But yeah, I mean, as it is right now, FTC can't be everywhere at once. State regulators can't be everywhere at once. And so I have been predicting for a while that we'll see private litigants sort of pick up the slack. I think that at least in the US, we haven't seen consumer lawsuits against brands, at least not that have made it to the point where they're filed, that I can find them, that are asserting claims based on non-disclosure. I think it's really just a matter of time. I mean, it's not my line of work to be on that side of things, but it wouldn't take that much creativity to come up with those theories. And if it caught hold, it would become much more prevalent.
And it's almost like the mainstream media need to see something like that. I mean, obviously, you know, we're all advocates of influencer marketing as a successful media, of course, but also when done well. I always say this all of the time as a caveat. What I want is the bad actors to be called out, because what it doesn't do is it doesn't support the people that are doing it properly and
exactly
doing it properly. And the next question I was going to ask you really was about influencer agreements, because that's a big part of having a relationship between brand and influencer or agency and influencer. What are some of the things that you think should be integral in those agreements?
Yeah, there's a variety of things. First is what we've been talking about. It's really critical to include in an agreement, at least in the US, to make sure that the influencer acknowledges and agrees to comply with their FTC disclosure requirements. And what I usually do is attach links to the endorsement guides and to the FTC's abbreviated document they put out in 2019 called Disclosures 101 for Influencers. And then go beyond that and break it down in like simple language. Here's when you need to make a disclosure. Here's how we want it to look, and just explain their obligations to them. Even better than that is if you have the means, some sort of training or some sort of presentation you can give to them. And the reason that is important to include in the agreement is because not every FTC investigation becomes an enforcement action, of course. And when the FTC closes an investigation without launching a full enforcement action, they often issue what's called a closing letter, which can give you a bit of insight into why this brand didn't get the book thrown at them versus someone else. And in those closing letters, from time to time, you'll see the FTC say things like, this company showed us that they have a contract in place with their influencers. They have compliance and monitoring programs in place. This was an isolated incident and not just a wholesale lack of any controls at all. If you are subject to some kind of inquiry like that, and you can say, you know, we're doing our best, we can't police every single influencer post everywhere, but check out our agreements where we set all this out and look at the training we give them, that goes a long way to limiting the likelihood that you actually have to deal with a lawsuit about it. So that's certainly a crucial part of it. And then apart from disclosure type things, you want to go over other basic FTC principles, like all ads have to be truthful, not misleading, and substantiated. So part of truthful is that even if an influencer is paid to promote a product, what they say about it still has to reflect their honest belief. So you can give sort of brand guidelines or brand safety type guidance, but you should remind them whatever you say needs to reflect what you actually think about this product and your actual experience with it, because then that protects both of you. I think it's worth noting, in case I missed it, from the FTC standpoint, liability for non-compliance extends to the influencer and the brand and any agency that's involved in the campaign. So I think it's common for some influencers to think, well, it's really on the brand to make sure that I did what I'm supposed to do. They're the ones that came up with their own marketing, and so it's not on me, but that's not the way the FTC sees it. So their position is compliance is everyone's responsibility. So I think those are important parts. And then things like you want to be clear about the scope of work. What exactly is the influencer doing? What's the compensation look like? What kind of usage rights are being negotiated for? And publicity rights too. So the way this can play out, or misunderstandings can happen. For example, there was a brand I was working with that had given a free sample of a product to an influencer, and the influencer understood this to mean, okay, I'm going to essentially unbox this product and do one Instagram story about it. And so that's what she did. And the brand took, she wasn't the only person they sent free product to. And so they sort of harvested these Instagram stories and edited them and turned it into a paid YouTube ad. Well, one of the influencers saw this and thought, well, wait a minute, I didn't agree to you using my likeness for commercial purposes and putting money behind a paid ad. If I knew you were going to do that, I would have charged an additional fee, which is completely reasonable. And it's the kind of thing that would have been so easily and simply set out in the agreement in the first instance and would have saved the headache. You know, the brand would not have had to come to me to smooth things over and sort it out. So being clear about usage rights and publicity rights and exactly who is giving up what in exchange for what kind of use is critical and is the source of most conflict around influencer agreements that I've seen.
I mean, just to add to what you just said there, I mean, presumably, if that was a really disgruntled influencer of some size and repute, they could sue the brand for loss of, and particularly if that ad went well and generated a certain amount of income, they could have sued them for loss of earnings, couldn't they?
There's a number of things there. There's certainly loss of earnings in connection with publicity rights would be, at least in California, the simplest and most attractive claim to bring for just based on the nature of how the publicity rights statutes operate here. But you've also got copyright issues. I mean, if an influencer films their content on their phone or whatever and puts it on their Instagram, unless you have it set out in the agreement, by default, they own the copyright to that content. And so if you're going to take it in, especially if you're going to put money behind it in an ad without setting out that kind of license permission in the agreement, then you also have a copyright problem on your hands, potentially.
Absolutely. Yeah. What about some of these newer platforms like TikTok? Is it any different in the way that people need to disclose, do you think? Or have you seen any particular issues around that platform?
Yeah, so it is important to pay attention to the limitations and features of whatever platform you're advertising on. So not every platform gives you the same space allotment. Some give you more space in the caption than others. With TikTok in particular, the difference or one of the quirks about that platform came up in a controversy before the National Advertising Division, which is part of the Better Business Bureau, essentially. It's a self-regulatory agency, I guess is the right way to put it. It's not government related, but it's a dispute resolution forum for businesses to sort out advertising problems that they have with one another. And the NAD has the ability to refer cases to the FTC. So in the context of TikTok, what had happened was, I think it was Bounty, a paper towel company, had run a pretty large influencer campaign on TikTok with some famous TikTok influencers. And their disclosure was with a hashtag in the caption on each TikTok. What happened was they were also sharing those TikToks on other platforms. So transferring the same content over to Instagram, embedding the TikTok in various places. The problem or the issue was when you repost a TikTok on other platforms, the video transfers, but the caption doesn't. And so when that content is now shown on Instagram or somewhere else, the disclosure didn't follow the content. And so one of Bounty's competitors challenged this, saying, well, you're not in compliance anymore. This is, you know, we're doing things by the book. You're not, that sort of argument. And so it raised the point that the FTC has been making that the disclosure needs to follow the content. So the solution to that is instead of writing hashtag ad, for example, in the caption of the TikTok, overlay it directly on the video so that wherever that content goes around the internet, the disclosure travels with it. So that's kind of a very particular issue, but it goes to the point of paying attention to the features and limitations of new platforms as they come up and how you need to adapt to that to comply with the FTC, because they're not going to change their rules around new platforms. It's going to be, you have to figure out how to make it work within them.
What other sorts of litigation issues can arise from influencer marketing, do you think? I mean, I'm just wondering about follower Discord issues where an influencer has put something out and you've got issues around, you know, negative publicity. So a brand is actually paid for an influencer to do it, and all of a sudden, for some reason or another, they've got a lot of bad publicity that has arisen.
That is something else that a brand can help themselves out at the contract drafting phase to limit the chance of litigating something like that. There's what's called morals clauses, which essentially the parties agree that if the influencer does something or something is found out about their past, even that would reflect badly on the brand, and the brand wants to cut ties with the influencer without having that be a breach of the contract, you can just write that into the agreement. It's fairly standard. And it can work the other way too. You can have a reverse morals clause where the influencer can say, for example, if it's found out that the CEO of this paper towel company did something horrible and I don't want to be associated with the brand, I can leave. And so that gives whichever side it is the flexibility to jump ship without worrying whether that will spawn some separate litigation over it. So, I mean, it in many cases, it might still involve a lawsuit over whether that fits within the clause the way you've drafted it, but it's something that you can think about at the outset to minimize the risk of having that become its own lawsuit.
I mean, I'm just thinking where, you know, maybe an influencer has been arrested or something has happened in their personal life. So whilst they may be a good influencer, but something has happened, the influencer has been blasphemous or something like that, which can harm a brand.
Yeah, and it can be even things that are off brand. Like if you're paying an influencer to promote your vegan chicken wings or something, and then they're posting stories at a chili cook-off or something like that, that's just incredibly off brand. That's something that you could also put in the agreement to say, okay, well, you've now entitled us to break this agreement without you saying that it's a breach of contract. So certainly something that's worth thinking about at the outset. If you're concerned about that from the brand standpoint at all, then it's certainly a reasonable request to put in there.
I remember a story. I don't know if you remember it. I can't remember who did it, but it was quite a famous one where content creator literally had been sent what to put into a post. And he pretty much copied and pasted the entire sentiment in the post. Now, you could say, well, that might have been a genuine error, or it might have been one of the content creators' team. That was quite a big issue at the time, wasn't it?
There have been a few examples of those. The one I'm thinking of is Scott Disick. He was promoting, I think one of those weight loss teas, and it said, "Here you go at 4 p.m. post."
Yeah. Oh dear, and I can imagine the audience thinking, "What on earth is that?"
Yeah. Well, at least they probably knew they were being advertised to at that point.
Yeah, of course. I mean, sort of final thoughts then. Are there any other areas of liability that, you know, agencies, influence, or brands should be aware of?
Kind of a broad question. I think we've covered the important parts, or some of the more important parts. Certainly complying with the FTC, publicity rights, intellectual property issues. Those are like really the fundamentals of what needs to be addressed at the outset. And making sure that you do monitor your influencer campaigns once they're live so that you can show you acted quickly if you need to. There's certain other things that you could find yourself in litigation over. I mean, people will sue over almost anything. So, but I think we've covered the things that come up over and over again.
Okay, that's really helpful. And where can people find out more about you? What's your website link?
My website's robertfroenlaw.com. I'm most active on Instagram, and my Instagram name is the same thing, at Robert Froenlaw. And recently I've been spending probably too much time on Clubhouse, but I'm on there as well.
This podcast is supported by the Branded Content Marketing Association, promoting the value of influencer marketing globally.
That's it for another edition of Influence. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show and give me your feedback, which is feedback@influencepodcast.net, or follow me on LinkedIn, Instagram, or Twitter, where you can also ask me a question. And lastly, if you do feel like it, please do give us a 5-star rating, as it helps the show immensely. Thanks to my producer, Neil Whiteside from Freedom One. And until next time, from me, Gordon Glenister, it's bye for now.